Okay, it's still November 3rd, and we're going to be talking now with Harold Andrews, who has been a jazz player for a number of years, and now his career has taken a different turn. And we'll be talking to him a little bit about what old jazz music in Pensacola was like and what his career in that style was like. Mr. Andrews, well, just sort of for the record, when and where were you born? Were you born right here?
Well, I was born here in Pensacola, yes, but I was reared in New York. For about 18 years, we lived there. My mother, my daddy was there too, but.
In New York?
Yes. But they had separated, you know, so she had custody of me, so you know the rest of it.
And so then, and after you lived there, then did you move back here?
Yes. We'd come back, you know, to see my grandmother at least, and our relatives and things. But after my mother decided fully that she wanted to come back home here, this was her home too. And so we came back and stayed. She died, and I had gone to school and everything. It's a good place, you know. Home is always good for you. You know what I mean? Because you can do things at home that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Well, how did you get started in music?
Well, I got started in music because, I don't know, I'm a child. I'd say 5 or 6 years old. I was attracted to music. I just loved it. Everything that was musical, I took to it, you know. And then, too, having that mother I had, she fostered a lot of my training because she helped to push me. Whatever I wanted to do, she was always there, you know. And I started taking music lessons at about 6 years old. And I played. I started playing at 9, 10 years old.
When you were taking music lessons, what instrument were you taking them on?
The piano and the violin. That's usually the thing. I mean, you're not an oldster like me, so you know. But it was it was kosher, you know, for you. If you took music, you had to take the piano or the violin, you know, or either both, you know, if you were apt enough to take both of them. You found very few kids venturing out on other instruments.
So that was when you were like 5 or 6, and did you have to learn to read music too?
Oh, yes, that's what I know. My mother wouldn't have had it any other way. See, because my grandmother was a musician. My mother's mother was a very good musician. She played the piano, organ, and so forth, you know. The cornet.
So music kind of ran in your family.
Yes. I have my mother's brother. He was a foster brother. He wasn't a blood brother. He was a child that my grandmother took in, you know, from one of her friends. And he grew up as a boy, and he learned to play. She taught him what she knew, and then when he there in New York, he learned more. And his name was Albert Morgan. He played the bass violin. This was where I learned to love the bass violin, because he played with some of the bigger groups like Cab Calloway and Duke Ellington. Oh, yes, he played with Lucky Miranda and Snookum Russell's band. He played with several of the bigger bands during that time. And since during that time, there were no 5 and 6 piece bands. They were huge bands.
That's
18
right.
Pieces, 22 pieces, no. Like the Paul Wagman Orchestra, the Claude Hopkins Orchestra, and so forth. And they played what people now call Dixieland, but it wasn't Dixieland then.
What did they call it?
It was swing music. It was swing music. That's what it was. It came to be that because, you know, in the early years, you know, before any of our time, you know, any of our parents' time, a group of some 20 or more Africans were brought over here to this country. And the black man, really, music was the only thing that he had freedom of doing. That he wasn't, you know, harassed by the other man. And he was able to develop this, and he expounded on it. So they played drums, and then they'd cut reeds and things, and make, you know, take little pieces of metal and things, make instruments. This is how that music started. And it started, the roots of it started right in New Orleans, along the Mississippi River. Chicago, after they, you know, they moved along the strip up into Chicago, and this is where your horns came in and all of this. The guys made money enough to buy instruments. These instruments came from England.
Well, now when you moved, when your family moved up to New York, how old were you then?
Oh, I was, six, 7 years old.
And that was, do you remember what year? Or was that in the 20s that that was?
Yeah, it was in the 20s, yes. Exactly, I can, you know, I wouldn't pinpoint it because I'm not at mind of it right now, but there's so many things that I'm trying to remember, you know, to get to you, so I'll, so it'll be authentic, you know.
Well, when were you born yourself?
I was born in 1916.
Mm-hmm. So it would be around in the early 20s, I guess.
Well, what kind of music did your grandmother play on the piano and the organ?
No, she played
church music?
Church music and ragtime, they called it, ragtime, you know. The same stuff as you heard Scott Joplin and those fellas play. And this was a thing then.
Well, when you were taking lessons then, when you started music lessons, were you learning how to play, like, ragtime, or,
no,
or was this
no.
was classical?
No, I learned that. No, they wouldn't allow me to do that.
Yeah.
No, I should say not. Boy, good gracious alive, no. My grandmother would have had a fit had she, you know. No, good Lord, no. You stuck to that method. And those methodical things that were there in your method, you know.
So you were learning classical music kind of stuff?
Yes.
But then when you got started on the, after your, I guess you call him foster brother? Albert.
Well, he was my mother's foster brother.
Your mother's
not
foster
mine.
Brother.
No.
When he started playing the bass, then you got interested in that.
Well, to tell you the truth, as a child, I always would stick myself in places where I wasn't wanted, you know what I mean?
You're not the only one.
I was just a pest. I guess you'd call me a pest, a nuisance, because every time the guy would almost sweep me out the way. Hey, fella, get out the way. I'd be all up in them, you know. And my mother, she was just as bad because, you know, being the type of mother she was, she would push me, you know, she'd take me. A kid couldn't go in places, you know, unless they had their parents. So she would go there, and some nights she'd be sitting there, you know, and the band would be playing. I'm standing up there, all on the bandstand in the fella's way, you know, trying to listen and watch them play, you know. And she'd pull a little thing, she'd be there nodding, you know, and I'd look over there and see her, and she was a frail, real frail person. And I'd tell her, come on, my dear, let's go home. I see you tired. And I knew she was tired because she had work, you know. We didn't have any support but her, you know. She worked to keep a roof over our heads. And she was the seamstress and a dress designer. She worked at 57th Street, a little bathroom dress shop there on 57th Street, New York. And by the time she finished, you know, it was 8 hours or more and commuted
back
and forth.
She was tired.
Yes, I knew she was tired. And I always loved my mother. I love my mother as a jewel, you know. And this would hate me to see her, but she loved me too as a jewel, you know. And she said, no, baby, you come on now. You just come right on, mother. We're going to take you. We'd go to this place and that place. I'd go to the Cotton Club, and I'd go to the Apollo Club.
So you really got to hear some good.
Oh, yes.
Good
Oh, my life, I was around outstanding musicians. Yes.
Well, when you moved back down to Pensacola, did you become like a full-time musician, or did you have to work at another job to?
Yes, I played. I've never been a sideman. You know, sideman is somebody playing under someone. I've never been that. I've always been the leader of my own groups.
I see. What?
In
well,
college, I organized the first college band that was there at Tuskegee Institute.
No kidding.
Yes, and I was the leader of it. And this was the strangest thing, though. The wasn't a boy, he was a young man. He was rehearsing the band, and see, I had attended New York School of Music. See, well, I thought I, you know, supposed to be pretty good, you know. And I heard them practicing over in the gym that day I passed by. I was a little freshman. And I heard the guy tell the fellas something. It was a big group, it was 19 of them. And I knew he was telling them the wrong thing, you know, and I didn't want to see it. I love music too well, you know, to hear somebody giving people the wrong information, you know, and wrong instruction. Me with my little busybody self walked in and I said, "No, man, that's not right." You know, I said, "You aren't telling those fellas right. Hey, man, you just as wrong as you can be." And he looked up and he said, "Well, who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm nobody, but I know that you are wrong." You know, and the fellas looked at me and said, "Well, how is it supposed to go?" Well, I got up and I showed them how it was supposed to go, you know. It made sense to all of them. So the next week, they appointed me the leader of the crew. They said, "They sure did."
It's like in the Army, if you volunteer, you get to do it.
Yeah, and the guy was a very nice person. He was extremely nice and very broad-minded. Mm-hmm. He was a piano player of the band, you know, and it was his idea to organize the band. And you know, he stayed there as a piano player under me.
Well, that's
and we grew to be dear friends. And now he's a bandmaster at Gremlin. Ben has
really?
Been the bandmaster there for years at Gremlin.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the big school that gives so many professional football players.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Wow.
His name is Conrad Hutchinson.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
Well, so then you were at Tuskegee for college then?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And then, so then it was after that that the family moved back here, or did you?
Well, we were living here then, see, because after I got sick, it's a long story, you know, I mean, you know, you can't just bring in everything.
That's
know?
Right.
But I got sick. I did a stupid thing with a group of fellas. We dared one another to break ice and go in swimming in the Hudson River in December. Me being a sand flea from a little one-horse town, Pensacola, you know. I just wasn't used to it, but I could swim real well. You know, I thought I could at the time, you know. And we broke ice and went into swimming into the Hudson River. It was about 16 or 17 of us. Five or six of the fellas froze to death there on the bank. And I stayed in the Presbyterian Hospital for at least 3 weeks, unconscious, not knowing anyone, anybody. So when I did come through, the doctor suggested that I might have something wrong with my lungs or something, and which it wasn't, but he said it was rather dangerous for me to continue in that heavy atmosphere up there.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, being the way my mother was about me, well, no one had to tell her, but she brought me home, you know. And I've been here ever since. Well,
uh-huh.
I've been to school, back and forward. I went to Wake Forest and Michigan State and University of Florida and several other schools, you know, get other training. But
you started out at Tuskegee after you came back here?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had a radio program in New York.
Did you?
Yes, for 2 years at WNYC.
WNYC?
Yes.
When was that?
This was in 19. The years of 1932, 33, and 34. See, my daddy was an engineer for the city, the plant and structure department, and he had attended Harvard University. He was a graduate of Harvard University. And he was hired by Manhattan Interborough.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, you know,
mm-hmm.
into
right.
city, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a city's program, or station at least, city-owned station, WNYC.
Mm-hmm.
It was and one of his colleagues, one of his fellows at work with, heard me sing one night. And he said, "Hey, that boy's got a beautiful voice." He said, "Why are you out pushing him?" he didn't want me, he didn't like musicians. He said all musicians were tramps. Because when I went to audition, I had auditioned for one of the big bands and had made the job, had made it for Lucky Miller's band. And I was going to be the guitar player, and he had a fit. Came down and announced all the fellas were nasty. And I wasn't going back, you know, after he called them tramps and all kind of things like that, dope heads and things like that. Well, it was just an embarrassing thing for me to go back, you know. All of the fellas did call me and ask me, you know, come back, you know, come on and play, but I never did.
Well, what were the names of some of the bands? You said that you've always had your own band.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you got back to Pensacola, did you have your own bands here too?
Yeah, and for a while, after the band business just went down to nothing, you know, they started the little combos, you know, and we had little funny bands, you know, around town with people, you know, some of them worked apart, some of them worked.
Uh-huh.
You know, and at that time, during that time, money was money, you know, and you had to make a buck, you know. And yeah, I was teaching school. I was making $49 a month teaching school.
It's not a whole lot.
And what I can say that it wasn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And I played. I got jobs. People knew, you know, my ability, and they gave me jobs, and I'd have to go find me somebody mm-hmm. to play, you know, like a piano player, maybe five pieces, you know,
mm-hmm.
a saxophone, a trumpet player, something like that. And,
was this after the war or during the war?
This
years?
What do you mean, World War II?
Mm-hmm.
No, during after World War II, I had organized a big band.
Oh, I see. So you're talking about...
I'm talking about doing
like the 1950s,
back to 50s and stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay, after the like, I get
uh-huh.
Right, because the big bands were real popular during the 40s.
Yeah,
all during the 40s.
Yeah. But see, this is when I started teaching here. I started teaching here in 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came to Washington in 40. And in 1941, I organized a big band. I mean, some of the most powerful musicians you find around in the area, you know, in any of these areas, you know.
Mm-hmm. But what was the name of that band?
It was the Royal Swingsters.
Royal Swingsters.
Harold Andrews Royal Swingsters. And we were royal, too, because we played good music, beautiful music. Everybody
mm-hmm.
loved the band.
Mm-hmm.
Well outfitted, you know, beautiful uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
So you'd all wear like uniforms?
Oh yes, we had. Oh yes, I never had a group. Didn't have
yeah.
one.
What did they look like? What were the uniforms like?
Oh boy, I wish I had. You know, I didn't. I had no. I just lost contact with you because I was looking for you tomorrow. I would have brought these things so you could see them because I have a scrapbook with all the stuff.
Oh. We'd love to see it. If we could make a time, sometime to come back.
Yeah,
sure.
That would be wonderful.
And then I'll have a room in shape over there.
Yeah.
I tell you, we're
going to be here the rest of this week,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, visiting with people and
mm-hmm.
interviewing people.
Well, you can
stuff,
come by
any
time. Just give me a ring. Let me know. I'd be happy to have you.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
That'd be real nice.
But speaking of, we had a... These little bands were just, you know, you get on the bandstand and call them up and fell to know it, you know, and you play and pay a little background for them, you know, those little things. But, I mean, these groups I'm talking about were organized groups. Five saxophones and five trumpets and four trombones.
A lot of people.
And, yes.
Well, where did they play?
Oh, various places. We played for club dances. We played for sorority balls and fraternity hops. And we played... Tallahassee, Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
Montgomery, Mobile, New Orleans, and Funiac Springs, and Atmore, Alabama, Broughton, Alabama. We played the country clubs and so forth,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the people that had the money, because, you know, the people in Broughton, you don't know much about this area, I don't think, but the people in Broughton, Alabama, you got about 75 or 85 millionaires up there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yes.
Wow. Didn't
you
know
see?
That.
Yeah,
and yeah, and Jay, where all those oil wells and things are, nothing but people with money, you know, and in Atmore, they had beautiful, lucrative country clubs and all that stuff, you know. where they would hire bands of that type, you know, to play for them. Mm-hmm. And Muston Beach, Naval Air Station, you know, the Eglin Field, mm-hmm. 9 Mile Road Field, all of those were installations, you know, Corey Field and so forth, mm-hmm. that would hire big bands, and they'd have those big balls and things. But we didn't have the auditorium here then, mm-hmm. but they had places like the Elks and the Knights of Columbus Hall and the Keopee Hall and the Elks and so forth, you know, that had large auditoriums mm-hmm. where they could afford a big yeah. group. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would you do advertising? Was that just sort of word of mouth? People would hear about you and...
Let me show you.
I was just noticing on this this one for the sort of a, what do they call it? Kind of a handbill? Is that what this is?
Yes.
Yeah, for the disco.
Now I did those myself.
Really?
Yeah, that's some of my work I do.
So your nickname is Fest.
Yeah.
On this, but Ida Goodson was talking about you as Hal.
Oh well, no, that's what they
That's what they used to call
you. They used to call me Hal. You know, I mean, people just call me that. But I've always been characterized as Fist.
Uh-huh.
Fist Andrews, you know.
How'd you get that nickname?
Well, when I first came here to teach, I was 19 years old, and the fellas, they thought they could run over me, you know, because I was so young, you know, and I showered down on them, you know, and I let them know, you know, that I need to have discipline, and that I was going to have it, you know, big guys, big football and everything. All Fist, they would call me All Fist, you know, and it just took a hinge on me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I've borne it ever since. So,
yes.
I guess that's, you know, that's one of those things, you know, you get, when you have association with people, they have certain outlook, you know. Place you with something, you know.
So it's sort of short for professor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Was that also maybe because you were because you were a teacher?
Yes.
All the way along, I guess.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you've been a teacher. Have you been a biology teacher ever since you were 19, or have you taught?
No,
different subjects?
I taught chemistry. I taught. Funny thing, when I came here, they appointed me chairman of the department. Huh. My first year. Well, I wasn't making the money, but it was just a name, you know, then, you know. But after I went to school and got my training, you know, and got myself fully fortified, certified at least, then they gave me, you know, the position of being in charge of the whole department.
Mm-hmm.
I taught general science. I taught health and science. I was a bandmaster for about mm-hmm. 3.5 years at the school, you know, the same school.
Yeah.
And I was teaching my classes too. I had a 60-voice boys glee club. It was the first. They never had one. I had a stage band, which was the first. They never mm-hmm. had one, you know. And that was the first and the last one too, because the guy that they have, you know, came along after me, he didn't have that kind of interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it is bad, you know, but you have to take a lot of kids, you know, that would have had a chance, you know, if they had mm-hmm. someone who was interested in that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I've graduated, and in fact, I've had a lot of little fellas that played with me that have gone to stardom. Junior Cook is working with Blue Mitchell's band, G.G. Grass and Thomas Grass. They are working at University of Ville-Poirier in France. G.G. Grass is a professor of music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don Shirley, man, you...
Is he from here?
Yeah.
Are they all, they're all right from right here?
Oh, yes. I don't care what he says. He's from the island. He's not from any island. He was born right here on Roos and LaRue Street, back of his dad's church. And Episcopal, his daddy, I'm an Episcopalian, his daddy was the priest at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Ruther's a child prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
He climbed up on his daddy's piano, a stool, and played the America the Beautiful at the age of 3 years old. No training at all. He just heard it and started playing it.
So all those people, Junior Cook and all that,
They played with me.
With you.
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've had any number of others. Bobby Carter, who was a second trumpet player with Erskine Hawkins. Jimmy and Bobby Lester, they were with Joe Simon's orchestra. I can't hear it. You know, I could just rattle them off if I could think of them fast enough. But all of them have been in my groups.
Mm-hmm.
They played with me. They played with me for years, you know, as side men in my band.
Well, we were, when we were talking with Ida just before, she was saying that one of the things they used to have, now you probably wouldn't remember this real well, but they used to have Mardi Gras celebrations in Pensacola.
Well, you see, now,
but you were at that time. You were
I
not
so much older than I am.
Right.
You know. And
yeah, and then you were gone.
You were gone probably
when
too.
You were young.
I didn't play much with them. Mm-hmm. I played, but I didn't play much with them.
Uh-huh.
You know, because we were close. You know, I don't mean that. You know that I was above them or anything.
Right.
But. We had a group, and she and her sister were doing, you know, odd and end playing, you know, like with somebody who wanted a piano player, and her sister was a very good piano player, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about which sister?
Ida's
sister. Which one, though?
Oh, my Lord. What's her name?
Is it the one that was married to the trumpet? Not Billy. Or Sadie, I think.
Sadie was, oh my God. Sadie was, she was outside, she was out of sight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And she had a beautiful singing voice, too.
Really?
Yeah, she could sing those blues, you know, and that, well, the ragtime stuff, you know,
yeah.
they did back then during that time.
Well, did you continue singing also, or did you just stick mostly with playing bass after you got your own band?
No, I sing. I love
sang
to sing.
Too?
I sing all the time. I mean, I'm on programs and things. You know?
Uh-huh.
That's why I wished, you know, that you could see my scrapbook. Because I sing for the children at school.
Oh, yeah?
I do, I sang for the graduating class. This past request of theirs that I sang at their commencement exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I sang Never Walk Alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I for the past for about 28 years straight, every year I sang at each teacher orientation, the new teachers. And you'll see in the scrapbook that it's school board sending me letters of commendation, telling me how well they enjoyed, you know, and
mm-hmm.
my voice made the affair, you
uh-huh.
know, a spicy thing and all kind of. I know it's just. Butting me up, you
it's
know.
Just flattery, but it sounds
yeah,
good anyway.
It sounds great.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, do you ever remember? There's a club. Ida was mentioning it also.
Yeah.
The Royal, was it Royal Entertainment?
Royal Entertainers.
That's where I spend records on Saturday night.
No
is
kidding.
It?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's the Royal Club.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how old is that club now?
Well, it's the club itself, not the building, but the club is, my Lord, they've had, it's a social club of men,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just consolidated their efforts and bought a building, you know,
mm-hmm.
to house their club in, you know. But the building isn't too old, but that club, my Lord, they had, this club was organized when I was a little boy crawling around on the floor.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And they've taking on, you know, new members, and some of them have died off, you know,
mm-hmm.
and others, and then they have one or two of the members that are still living.
Still around,
yes,
uh-huh. founded.
Still active, yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
It's
cool.
not much, you know, but it was as much as the black community could afford at that
mm-hmm.
time, you know, and I mean.
Well, where is it located?
It's on Alkanese between, right off of Texar Drive. You have to go south. You know, when you turn off of Texar Drive, because it's a one-way street, you know,
right.
and you'd find it right on the corner. It's a little tall building. Mm-hmm. And it usually has, tonight, the professor who was with his big record machine or sign out front. But I passed by that just now, and I saw they had taken it in, because the guy that works in there, the caretaker, he puts it up every Friday.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Take it down.
No, what, can the members bring, like, female guests, wives, or dates, or things?
Well, they're friends, and the membership, they afford a membership. Uh-huh. I think that's the way they do it. You know, they afford membership for different people who they feel like, you know, would be mm-hmm. able to take part mm-hmm. and like what is going on in there. See, because they like the old music. Now you're not going to find many youngsters here. So mm-hmm. that rules them out, you know. Mm-hmm. And they like the type of entertainment that people of the middle age would like, you mm-hmm. know, like bingo. And mm-hmm. They've got a little game called the horse races and things like that, you know. That
they so do. It's kind of just a social
center. Yeah, it is a
people.
Social center, yeah. Yes. And they have a bar in there, you know, mm-hmm. with strong drinks or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. soft drinks, whatever you'd like. Mm-hmm. And they have a club that is a sponsorage club that they're sponsoring of young people that come in. Well, sometimes they have plate lunches and things like that, you know, to afford. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wonder, because I wondered if they had dancing, if you were
yes.
playing records.
Oh, yes, they have dancing. Oh, oh yes. Or else you can sit uh-huh. and listen, you know. Mm-hmm. You like. It's whatever you know, mm-hmm. whatever you like to do.
Oh, it sounds nice.
Well, it is nice, and it's quiet. You know, and the music is soft. Mm-hmm. The speakers are not jumping off around the floor dancing all over the people, you know, instead of people dancing on the floor. well, that's right.
I know.
Yeah.
So for them, you play like some of the big band standards and
yeah, I play some of everything. Mm-hmm. I play some of everything. I play Rosemary Clooney. I play the Boswell Sisters. I play Bobby Bland, Woody Harmon, mm-hmm. Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey, Glenn Miller. I play them all. Mm-hmm. This is the type of music that they, you know, they want. I play cameo.